Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We going to announce the password again. If you're ready to go to a party, your chance to win a pair of tickets to the first weekend of Jazz Fest. Today's password is Beignet. B-E-I-G-N-E-T. That's Beignet. Now go to WWL.com/contest, not the text line, but WWL.com/contest and register to win. It's that easy. Don't miss your chance to win Jazz Fest tickets plus the Jazz Fest Express shuttle passes. Those are huge. WWL is giving away a pair every day this week. All you have to do is listen to Tommy, me, Scooter, Sports Talk for the Jazz Fest password of the day to see the amazing artists like Chris Stapleton, John Batiste, The Killers, the Robert Cray Band, Heart, Rebirth, Brass Band, and more. Good luck and happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. We will be out there broadcasting live, too, on the first Friday of the fest. Looking forward to that. Had a great time out there last year. Look forward to doing so from the Miller Lite tent, and we look forward to that. Can't wait for Jazz Fest. Had a great time at French Quarter Fest, too. And I want to say it again, they did a great job. They had security checkpoints where necessary, not, you know, overboard. They moved people along. It totally made sense. Saw a huge police presence, too. Want to thank the members of the NOPD, the NOFD, EMS. As I said before, I saw EMS handle a lot of calls for service out there. That was great. Got to meet and talk to a lot of great people out there, and really enjoyed ourselves, had a great time. And the weather was phenomenal. I mean, it was just absolutely great, and glad that we got French Quarter Fest behind us and very successful. The numbers of the attendees had to be a record set. Can't wait to hear from those folks, and maybe we'll follow up with them later this week as they do their after action on the French Quarter Fest. Wanted to talk about some of the texts coming in. You know, and it's interesting people's perspective on things and how they keep wanting to go back to something. So if we pay attention to where your priorities lie and your topics, you believe blocking traffic is a more egregious offense than storming the Capitol in a coup attempt. Don't play dumb either. You moved on from the January 6th news within a couple of days of the event and haven't revisited since, that I've heard. Well, I am one of those that doesn't believe that the world revolves around Donald Trump. You may, I don't. January 6th, I condemned it for what it was. I also said on January 7th that we need to put Donald Trump in our rearview mirror and move on. It hasn't worked out that way. It hasn't played out that way. But it's still going to be, you know, the outcome is still out there to be yet to be determined. But what is there to talk about January 6th? The fact of the matter is the system is working as it's designed to work. They identified individuals, some more egregious than others. They've charged them accordingly. They've brought them to court. Some are already serving time. Some have yet to go to trial on their respective charges. So what is it that I should talk about? The system is working as designed. I talked about how egregious it was. I talked about how we were selling people a pig in the poke that Mike Pence could alter the course of the certification of the electors there, that would have been an extraordinary event, so out of the ordinary, no one even really wants to think about it. But the fact of the matter is both parties are guilty as it relates to denying electors. They've all gone to the mic on the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate talking about this. Go do your research. So that in and of itself doesn't move me one way or the other. But for me, the world does not revolve around Donald Trump. Donald Trump has a lot of warts. I, for one, have said I don't believe that he's the future of the party. In fact, if he gets elected, he can serve one term. That, in and of itself, to me, does not work in the best interest of the party. What do we gain? Look at where we are now. We're trying to defend ourselves as it relates to him, as opposed to being able to boast about where we would be. Our candidate, whether you like it or not, is caught up in court. Whether it's fair or not is a whole different topic, but he's caught up in court. That doesn't bode well for us going into November. Yes, the polls are indicating that he's in the lead of 5 of the 6 swing states. Those numbers have been moving. They're very fluid. I suspect that they're going to move even more as the Democratic political machine kicks into high gear, which historically and most recently, they have been able to turn out their vote with a lot more success than we have been, because we have been stuck as it relates to early voting. We've been encouraging people to not early vote and only show up on the election day. And then when election day has snow 6 feet deep in some areas, bad weather in other areas, we don't get the voter turnout. We don't get the votes, and we wonder why. Because the others are just worrying about getting the vote. We're worried about how they vote. We can do exactly what they're doing. We don't. So we're competing against a model that is more likely to succeed than the model that we've adopted. And now everybody all of a sudden is recognized and realized, whoa, maybe we're wasting our time arguing about that. Maybe we ought to engage in making sure that we turn out the vote in the same way. Right? You don't have to listen long to conservative TV, radio, or otherwise, and that's what all of the pundits are saying. And we're finally waking up and understanding that, you know, the get out the vote effort is incredibly important, and it's broader than just election day. But this really isn't a battle for the right, far right, or the far left. This is a battle for the center. And when you look at what's going on right now, we're both miserably failing, meaning Democrats and Republicans. We're trying to shore up the fringes of our party and not recognizing that those in the center are going to elect the next president. They're going to elect the senators. They're going to elect the members of the House. And everything is held in balance, because there's not a big majority in either the House or the Senate. So really, there's a lot at stake in November. I'm a Republican, but I'm not one that refuses to criticize Republicans, because I don't think that's healthy. to just go along, to get along and think everything's hunky-dory and it's all going to work out in the end and believe whatever our alleged Republican leaders have to say. I'm not one that's going to jump on an idiot bandwagon, if that's what it is at that moment in time. I'm more likely to be one that points out that that's idiocracy. What are we doing? What are we saying? How does this work for us in the end? This is crazy. And, of course, I've been a defrocked Republican multiple times, and I wear that with a badge of honor because that means, in my mind, that I'm probably making sense. They fear more people talking about it. So I'll continue to do that. But Trump, the world doesn't revolve around Trump for me. I know he wants everybody to believe that the world revolves around him, but I'm not on that bandwagon. Not now, not ever. He lost last time for a reason. We should spend a lot of time delving into that and trying to figure out why he did. Wasn't by a lot. When you look at the total number of votes that he needed to get in order to shift that electoral vote, it's not a lot. But the fact still remains he lost. And a lot of what happened the last time might happen again this time. Some would say with more evidence, more things to ding the candidate than they had before. Some would say not so much, that there's more to ding as it relates to Biden. Folks are texting in and they're saying, well, you know, you're always picking on Biden. He's the president. He's the one that's passing policy. He's the one that's telling Israel, let me handcuff your other hand behind your back so you can go try and fight this war. He's the one that's making decisions about the southern border. He's the one that undid every policy that Trump put in place where the numbers were far less crossing the border illegally than what's happening today. I don't need to focus on what Trump did or said 4 years ago. We need to focus on what's happening right now. Now, I know that doesn't bode well for many folks that fall on the Democratic side of the aisle, but the fact of the matter is he's the president and you have control of the Senate. So, I mean, that's where we find ourselves politically at the present time. And, you know, unless and until we can be honest with one another about that, I mean, that's the bottom line. A lot of what we have today, some of Biden's policies have actually worked. But a lot of it hasn't. And the public's perception, and perception is reality, is that they're saying poll after poll after poll that they do not find themselves in a better position today than they were 4 years ago. That's not what I'm saying. I don't have to say it. That's what the public is saying in almost every single solitary poll that's out there. Now, it's got a lot of pollsters scratching their heads, wondering why. You know, because when you look at some of the economic data, it kind of reveals a different picture. But that's not what they're feeling when they're buying milk and lettuce and peanut butter or whatever it may be, where they're paying more, where they're going out to dine and they're paying more. They're feeling the kitchen table issues day in and day out. Why? Immigration polls is one of the biggest problems in the country. I've had a gut feeling that immigration was going to be an issue for a long time. I know in this market I've talked about immigration more than anybody else. Why? Because I lived it as a sheriff. I cooperated with ice. Took a lot of criticism for doing it. But the reality is that when I held up my right hand and swore that I was going to enforce the Constitution and laws of the United States, the Constitution and laws of this state, and the ordinances of Jefferson Parish, I did not see an exception list there. I did not see any asterisks. I did not read something that was annotated that said, see below for further explanation. But yet we have those that believe that one should have be empowered to unilaterally decide what they want to enforce and what laws they don't. Which ones they agree with, which ones they don't. These are laws long before Joe Biden took office, long before Donald Trump took office. If you go back to the first 4 years of Obama, you're going to find that he deported more illegal aliens than I think pretty much every president in modern time. How do you explain that? And then when the fringes of his party started to freak out and recognize and realize, well, wait, this works contrary to what we're trying to accomplish here, the second 4 years was a whole different gig. And we started implementing these exotic immigration policies that, one, a lot of people questioned whether or not there was the authority to do so. We started creating classifications of illegal immigrants in this country and giving them additional benefits, one, that a lot of people questioned whether or not there was the legal authority to do so. And the list goes on and on and on, and it's continued more and more and more. And we find ourselves, like in the city of Denver, that has now decided to defund police to the tune of $8.4 million in order to pay for benefits for illegal aliens. This was the sanctuary city that put up a big banner that says Denver loves immigrants. Well, we all love immigrants. We're all immigrants. The question is, do we love illegal immigrants more than legal immigrants? Legal immigrants themselves say, no, we should not. I had to wait outside this country for 10 years to get in. And now folks coming across the border illegally are getting more benefits than I was ever afforded to me who waited for years on end to come across the border legally. In fact, a Chicago restaurateur the other day, who's part of the National Restaurant Association, is complaining about that very happenstance. Say, what about the people that I've employed that have been paying taxes forever now? They're not getting any of these benefits. They're not getting expedited work permits. They're not getting this. They're not getting that. A Democrat calling out the Biden administration saying, what are you doing? This makes no sense. How is it that we're taking folks that have coming from the back of the line, putting them in the front of the line, and we're basically discouraging people to do anything in the appropriate fashion or to follow the laws of this country? And we're rewarding that behavior. The city of Denver at first tried to blame the governor of Texas. Well, it turns out that an independent organization has looked to see the makeup of the population, and it turns out that a lot of the folks that ended up in Denver were there as it relates to the policies of the Biden administration. It had nothing to do with the governor of Texas moving people from Texas to Denver. And it's interesting to see how this is working. Most of the counties that surround Denver now are getting very aggressive as it relates to the ordinances and laws that they're passing in those counties because they've had enough. And the overflow out of Denver, that has put out this warm and fuzzy feeling for illegals to seek refuge there, that they're now crossing into other counties. And these other counties, some of whom that say, we take pride in being a low-taxed county. We don't have the money to support this migration process that's going on right now. We want no part of it. This has become a very disruptive force to an otherwise stable, organized community that takes pride in not taxing their people in a huge way. And we've taken this common sense approach to government, what we're going to provide, this, that, and everything else. We cannot afford to be the overflow to the city of Denver in the county that that city's in. That county that I'm talking about would be where, in the southern part of the state where Colorado Springs is located. We are a low-tax county, and this is having a huge impact on the region. So this is why this is ending up being the number one issue, is that people now are feeling it across the country. And I know folks don't want to come to grips with this issue, but they damn well better. Because it's now impacting the quality of life that a number of counties in this country have come to enjoy. And it's eroding away the ability of local government to provide the resources necessary to their constituents that they've grown accustomed to. In Denver, they're cutting police, they're cutting fire, they're cutting social services, medical costs in that city and county are going up daily, and folks have had enough. And in fact, as liberal as the Colorado State Legislature is, they passed a bill that said that local government could not cooperate. Listen to this. They passed a bill that said county government could not cooperate with ICE. What's happening now? The counties are now suing the state, wasting taxpayer dollars because they did not want counties to cooperate with the federal government. If this is not stupid is as stupid does, I'm not sure what is. This is absolutely crazy. But they're paying the price, and it's well-deserved. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola and former NOPD chief. He also served as the head of the Washington State Police as well as the chief of Nashville Police. So he brings a knowledge set that we typically don't have from other jurisdictions from a law enforcement perspective. And as such, Ronnie, welcome to the show.
No, it's great to be with. Thank you.
So, Ronnie, another breaking story about Officer Vappy being part of the security detail team for the mayor, dining with the mayor. You know, I know that we were promised after a lot of this broke about a year or two ago, that there would be new policies and protocols about executive security detail for the mayor. But it almost seems like we're back to square one again. Your thoughts?
If I was the chief looking at this, I would be able to assign no credibility whatsoever to anything Vappy said about the way he performs his duties, not to include his coworkers saying how he performed his duties. So any explanation for having dinner at the Tableau would be meaningless to me because there's no credibility. Secondly, you're right. I worked for one governor and three mayors. Every one of them had an executive protection package. Every one of them respected those officers and troopers. Every one of them, never one of those troopers or officers to be accused of any special treatment or the appearance of special treatment. So as the chief, it was easy for me because there was no superior authority to me, i.e. the mayor or the governor, using what they would think is their authority as the chief executive of the city to essentially countermand and ignore the police department's policies on executive protection, overtime, et cetera. So what I'm saying, Newell, is if you were the chief and you said to the mayor, hey, look, our officers can't work overtime unless it's this way. Our sergeants and lieutenants have to approve these things. And the mayor said, oh, good, do your job, and you didn't do it. But what if in this case, hypothetically, the mayor is just saying, I'm the boss, I don't care what the NOPD policy is, and I'm going to do what I want you to do. That, I think, is part of this issue of supervision.
Yeah, you know, I made the observation, a couple of people texted in and say, oh, that's a little rough. I said that if I was on this executive security detail, I'd get off. If I saw what was going on, the repeat of this behavior, I'd want no part of this because I don't think it bodes well for my credibility, professional approach to the occupation. And I'm just curious, who would want to be on this detail under this, you know, with this set of circumstances?
First off, I do not know a New Orleans police officer, current, active, or retired, who is not sickened and embarrassed by this behavior. My father was an executive security protection guy. They took that work seriously because their job was to protect the principal. Now, this principal told us that they needed security protection in Switzerland because they were so well known. My gosh, sitting at the tableau table, you don't think that's where you'd be most likely known? I mean, it's embarrassing to the men and women of this department. These decisions usurp the natural chain of command and authority of a paramilitary organization that has to control its employees. Candidly, I can't imagine that this is much different than the mayor saying, I'm the chief executive of the city and I can ignore the NOPD rules and we will do so for VAPI. Have a nice day. I've been elected twice and survived the recall. Have a nice day.
Yeah. You've consulted a number of policing agencies around the country that find themselves in the midst of a consent decree. Obviously, the federal monitoring team had a lot of observations to make about the previous investigation. Obviously, looks like we're about to set upon yet another investigation here. How confident are you that this is going to be conducted a little differently and hopefully in a better fashion than the last time?
Well, I don't know how confident we can be because the principles are the same and they thwarted the last one either overtly or covertly, first. Secondly, I think New Orleans got lucky that Chief Kirkpatrick had just hit the scene because a judicial temperament like Judge Morgan has obviously is, well, okay, we have a new player in town. Let's give it a shot. But the endemic culture of this notion that Raphael Guarnici is the one who has to point out over and over again what the Public Integrity Bureau seemed to cannot find on their own, said to the judge in court, well, we didn't see double dipping. And they said, why not? Well, we didn't look for it. Candidly, I think they got a break because Chief Kirkpatrick was new, but I don't know why a judicial temperament would continue to put up with what appears to be just a flagrant disregard for the quality and necessary independence of a public integrity investigation.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to say, well, we didn't know, right?
Almost hit a car. No.
Yes. I mean, you got to almost laugh to keep from crying, but I mean, if I'm the head of that unit as well, I mean, I would have serious reservations and problems with what's actually happening. And I mean, how do you go in and tell the federal judge, Judge Morgan, well, we really didn't know. We didn't make that observation.
It's just ridiculous and ludicrous. And it's one of the reasons that the consent decree was here in the first place, right? I mean, look, I think every mayor who has a consent decree, either on their watch or they inherited, has to confront the reality that some of these monitoring costs are just so prohibitive. You can't fix lights. You can't fix potholes. But if the department continues to essentially demonstrated has no capacity to recognize the gift that they were given with this Kirkpatrick decision to kind of get their house in order. I think the NOPD's statement last night was, we're going to send this to somebody else. Who? When? Why? You know, those are the kind of things I would think the judge would want to know. Right? Who's going to investigate it? When they're going to do it? And why aren't you doing it? Okay, fine. Let me know.
Yeah, I mean, what does it say as to your growth as an organization if you can't handle this internally? I mean,
I think what it says is what we've heard, right? I mean, so you and I have been in this business a long time. There is always a natural tension between labor and management about promotions, investigations, right? There's always that natural tension.
Yeah.
And I've heard all my life from PANO and FOP that there's not an honest IED investigation on the planet in the NOPD. But after these last 4 or 5 years, I got to tell you, Newell, they're probably more right than they've ever been. And that is an incredibly important thing for these young officers who are putting their lives on the line, for these interloping electeds who come and go and get reelected and survive a recall. And apparently the value of their total contribution of a department is just, you know, dismissed as if not important.
Yeah, you know, and what I find really disheartening, and I'm sure you do too, because we both care, is that the momentum that's been created by the Ann Kirkpatrick decision and some of the decisions that she's made since, and the manner in which she has conducted herself. In fact, I thought there was a happenstance, and I'd love to get your reaction to this, a significant growth in credibility when they proactively released that there was a problem with some of their UTR incident-based reporting numbers a couple of weeks ago. And I watched that with a lot of curiosity. I thought it was very professionally handled. I thought they were very forthright and honest, and it was necessary, and they did it.
And, absolutely. And she had people. You know, Chief Gernon is a smart guy. He was able to articulate incredibly complex issues that the public's eyes roll in the back of their head when you talk about NCVS, you talk about NIBRS. But I agree. I think it was handled well. It was out front. It wasn't confrontational. That's what Chief Kirkpatrick can do. Chief Kirkpatrick can't make Mayor Cantrell do anything, right? Yeah. She can't make her do anything. So, you know, that'd be like, you know, they hire Drew Brees and then Mickey Loomis and them lose their minds and surround him with a bunch of Division III players, right? Yeah. And so Kirkpatrick is trying to play a game where the ownership does not necessarily send the message that they get the game.
Yeah, you know, I love the way you put that because it is spot on. And, you know, obviously the pack's trying to run in a different direction than the speed of the leader, and they keep getting sucked back into this vortex. And no matter how many things they do to improve and increase the momentum that they have gained, it takes like this one isolated incident. Well, it may not be so isolated, but what we know of it right now, that completely diminishes whatever gain or eliminates whatever gain that we've made.
It does, and you know you can't run that far. You can't run very far on the Tableau balcony. Look,
Let's be honest
with you. The mayors that I worked for were so grateful that these officers would serve as their protection that they were crazy worried that anyone think they got a special deal, that they got extra overtime for doing nothing. These mayors, and I worked for three, and I worked for a governor, so that's all I know, right? That's four of them. They were identical. Chief, we have to make sure that these officers are not looking like they're getting a leg up on the men and women who are out there banging away at the call every day. They respected it. This is something where it doesn't look like there's much respect.
Got to get to a break. We'll be right back with Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola and former NOPD chief. Stay with us, folks. We're visiting Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola and former NOPD chief. Ronnie, I wanted to get your reaction to the crime stats. Month after month, we continue to have reductions, and in many categories, outpacing the national trend. Your thoughts?
You and I both know as a political question, meaning what the community perceive is way ahead of the government data. And I think that the community doesn't feel safe yet, no matter what the charts say. And that's what we have to answer is how does the community feel?
And we all know that that's difficult to change in that direction, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's
Absolutely.
Far greater than I've often said that a lot of and I don't know if you necessarily agree with me, but I always believe that response time was the key, was the building block to developing that public trust to crimes reported. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it helps because what happens is if you call and the police get there, you have a sense that something can or will be done. If you call and they never come, it adds to the perception that nothing is being done. So, look, I lived and died by data. You lived and lied by data. But I never lost sight of the simple truth is that citizen perception is way ahead of government data. And citizen perception is really all that matters. Half of all crime goes unreported. We have all those data points. The bottom line is, people don't feel safe yet. It's like telling them that they have more money in their pocket and they don't. It just doesn't resonate. And, you know, for me, and I know we were going to talk about it, I'll do it really quick. We lobbied heavily against guns in bars when I was in Tennessee. Having guns in places where people are drinking and that it's just not a good idea, right? So I'm glad to hear that there's some talk about perceiving that the French Quarter and maybe the DDD as well. Jesus, look what happened just the other night in the downtown development area. So I have a long record of recognizing that the gun issue isn't for me a Second Amendment or a Democrat or Republican. It's a public safety thing. If you're drinking, don't have a gun. I don't know how much more difficult it can be.
No, absolutely. State the obvious, right?
That's always. That's what we do.
Ronald Surpass, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate your insight as well. Have a great week, my friend.
You too. Thank you.
It's Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola and former NOPD chief. We will check in with Scoot when we return. Stay with us. Scoot joins us, and he's coming up next. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, you know that picture of Mayor Cantrell and Officer Vapi having that, what appears to be a romantic dinner on the balcony? Seems like more questions are being asked, and rightfully so, and I just think it's a shame that NOPD doesn't answer questions. I mean, it's obvious they don't want to answer any questions. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit about that. Congratulations to Angel Reese. She is now in the NBA.
Absolutely. Where'd she go? Number seven?
Number seven,
Number seven, absolutely. Scoot's up next. Stay tuned, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you in the morning.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.